The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Who's that on the other end of the Zoom rocking a sick Hawaiian shirt? Why, that's our super producer, the one and only Max Williams. They call me Ben. Got to work on a mafia nickname here, Noel. What do you think?
Oh, well, one of our guests today's speciality is giving mafia nicknames. So maybe we can hold that for at the end of the episode.
Fantastic. And let's revisit it in part two. We have just snuck you a bit of a spoiler, folks. This week's series, we are diving into the stories of boneheads, of goons, of ne'er-do-wells. We are talking about some strange, dumb, dare I say, ridiculous stories from the world of organized crime. And we're not going into this alone, are we, Noel?
We're not. That is my name. My name is Noel. We are joined today by Matt Lieb and Vince Mancini from the incredible Sopranos podcast, the only Sopranos podcast that matters, in my opinion. Pod Yourself a Gun. I'll let you guys introduce yourselves a little bit further, but Matt and Vince, welcome to Ridiculous History.
Hey.
What's Max, up? Can we get an applause cue?
There it is.
Thank you. We deserve that.
You did deserve that. So you guys have been doing Pod Yourself a Go, which is a Sopranos rewatch podcast, I guess, for what you're on season 5 now.
Yeah.
How many episodes in is that? That's a lot of eps.
It's like 60 something. I don't know. At this point, I've stopped counting.
I mean, it's not a math podcast, so.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
There it is.
This is a podcast for people who, they didn't like math in school. You know, what they liked to do in school was listen to Slipknot and watch mafia movies. And that's who it's for. People
What's in again now in a big way? Slipknot and mafia movies.
And those
is back.
Yeah, they're timeless. They're timeless. Mm-hmm. People have been listening to Slipknot since the dawn of time.
RIP, their drummer, though. I forget
his name. Yeah, I was going to say, now that he's dead, they're really
timeless. Yeah, Joey. Great drummer.
He belongs to the universe now.
Exactly. Yes,
which is what Slipknot set out to do, I believe, if you've watched their documentary that came out in the Cenozoic era.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with this, we were trying to think of some of the best people to explore the stories of, let's say it, kind of dumb criminals.
kind of thick-headed mobsters here. And we had one of those moments like in Ghostbusters where they're trying to figure out how to like fight back against Vigo, and they all look at the license plate where the Statue of Liberty is, and they looked at each other. That was Max, Noel, and me, except the Statue of Liberty here was you guys. So we thought, who better to explore these stories with us? And for our ridiculous historians listening along at home, what we did is the four of us, Matt, Vince, Noel, and myself, each found a story or a person that perfectly illustrates just how dumb the mobster game can be, or the criminal game in general. And, you know, Matt, you and Vince had come up with a couple that I had never heard before, and yeah. I can't wait to learn about them with you.
Nice. Let's see.
Yeah, you were pretty into the story of what's this guy's name?
His name is Vincent Gigante. Yeah, who is someone who I had never heard of up until Vince and I were doing an episode of The Sopranos in which you can't really tell if Junior Soprano is actually suffering from dementia or if he's faking it for the cops. And, you know, it's clear that he's definitely faking it in some capacity early on, but then it kind of turns into dementia.
Yeah, he gives himself irony poisoning for dementia.
Exactly. Yeah, he got irony poisoning from dementia poisoning. Anyways, Vince at one point mentioned that the storyline was kind of loosely based on this guy, Vincent the Chin Gigante.
The Chin.
The Chin, they called him, who was he was the head of the Genovese crime family for 24 years.
They said this guy could put on pillowcases in like 2 seconds flat. It was incredible.
I mean, you know, they called him the Chin for mostly because his mother, who was an Italian immigrant, affectionately called him Cinzino. which is, it's kind of like Vincent, Vincenzo, Cinzino. It goes, this is how mafia names are created.
It's sort of like British rhyming slang, you know? Like,
it's exactly right.
Yeah.
There's a cadence to it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he was called the Chin, but he actually, in later years, he started, you know, being given a different moniker. He went by another name, the Odd Father. And that's because from 1964. to 2003, he pretended in public to be completely shithouse rat insane in order to avoid prosecution. I'm going to try to swear less on this podcast than I usually do.
That lasted a full 15 seconds. Good job.
More of it, Matt. We tagged this with the little E for explicit.
All right, good.
Pretty sure shithouse is in the Bible, too, so we're
fine. It's in the Bible. Come on. Yeah. That's the first thing they said about Cain. They were like, Cain was shithouse rat insane, and he slew Abel. So he started, he basically acted insane for like almost 40 years. He was in public. He was pissing on stuff. He was walking with a limp. He was dressed like a homeless guy.
Was he the bathrobe guy?
He's the bathrobe guy.
Oh.
He was basically known for being out in Greenwich Village in a bathrobe, slippers, floppy hat, you know, just kind of like muttering to himself, like, I'm walking here, eat the gabagool. and doing all sorts of crazy nonsense to try to throw off the cops. He was known by the Odd Father, the Crazy Don, Dummy Brasco, the Gobble Fool, Goof Fella, Don Corley Sloaney.
I was hoping there was one of those.
Analyze piss. Can I say piss?
You're making these up.
Piss is also in the Bible.
Okay, and good. Indeed. If that doesn't work, if that gets bleeped, analyze scat. Yeah. So he was known by all those names, or at least the first two. He pretended to be crazy. So just a little bit of background on this guy. So he's the son of Italian immigrants who came to America in the 20s, along with a lot of Italian-American immigrants at the time. And he, you know, he grew up in Greenwich Village, kind of, you know, a mafia neighborhood, right? So he started his life as kind of a professional boxer. He dropped out of school and he started boxing. He had a record of 21-4. He was pretty good.
That's what you do when you got a really good chin, you know?
When you, you know, that's the thing. If you got that strong chin, you get into boxing. Although,
as opposed to a glass jaw, that's the opposite of a strong chin. Right?
Exactly. Okay. You don't want to have a glass jaw. But, you know, his true passion was not for boxing. Ooh. It was for doing murder for the mafia. Also, I guess, method acting a little bit, but mostly doing murder. So at the time that, you know, he was coming up, it was kind of the beginning of like the modern mafia. Right. So, you know, if you don't know the story, it's like Lucky Luciano basically created today's modern mafia, the five families. Right. So Vito Genovese was part of the Genovese crime family, but he wasn't the head of it. Right. So Vito Genovese became like basically Gigante's mentor. You know, they were like inseparable. They were homies. You know, he did murder for him, all that fun stuff. And Lucky Luciano, actually, when he got deported in the 40s, he named Frank Costello to be the head of the Genovese crime family. Meanwhile, Vito Genovese is like, but it's my name. Why can I not be at the head of the family? And they got into kind of like a little war. And basically, it ended up that Frank Costello like won for a while until Vito Genovese basically ordered the chin, you know, Vincent Gigante, to murder Frank Costello. So he tries to murder him, fails. It kind of just like grazes his skull. But Frank Costello is like, all right, I get the point. And he decides to basically quit. And then, you know, Genovese actually becomes the head of the Genovese crime family. So 1959, Gigante and Genovese are both convicted in federal court on charges of like heroin trafficking. And Gigante at that point was sentenced to 7 years, which is only half of Genovese's sentence. But that's because the judge read a slew of letters saying that like Gigante was like had really good character and was a very nice guy. And he worked on behalf of New York City youth. Like, so this is the type of guy he was. He's like
buys
various
many fine pastries and cured meats for his mom every morning.
Exactly. He teaches the kids to box. That's, you know, right. Otherwise, they're going to grow up with glass jaws. What do you want?
You know, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month, if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships,
bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now.
So he's this like good dude, but he still gets time. So he has to serve 7 years. And that's when it starts. After his release from prison in 1964, Gigante started toying with the idea of like, what if I pretend to be mentally ill? So he started walking the streets of Greenwich Village, pretending to be like disoriented and like mentally unstable and muttering and stuff. That was kind of like the beginnings of it. He was like, let's try this out.
I'm sorry. I have a quick question. Yeah. It seems like the kind of thing you would do during a trial to keep from going to prison. But he had already been to prison. Now he was doing this to continue to do murders and crimes and maybe avoid prosecution for further crimes.
An investment. Right.
You know, this is my
long
theory
game, long con. Okay, got it.
Yeah. So my theory is that like he was able to get a reduced sentence by having people say that he's a really nice guy, but he still had to go to prison. And he was like, all right, so that didn't really work, you know, because I'm sure he actually wasn't really a nice guy. I'm sure all those letters were like gun to your head. Say I'm a good person.
He's no Bobby Bacala.
No, Bobby Bacala. This is more of a Richie Aprile type guy, you know, total loose cannon, murderer, everything like that. So I think he realized, like, it's not a good angle trying to convince the judge I'm nice. It's a better angle to convince the judge I'm crazy. So when he gets out, he starts the beginnings of the ruse. He starts walking around, you know, he's got the robe and slippies on, the weird hat, you know, and, you know, he's like, he's peeing on stuff. He's talking to parking meters. He's having a grand old time.
You was farting in a bathtub and laughing your ass off.
I hope he's talking to a parking meter while he's peeing on it.
Just for sure.
You deserve this the way you're looking at me.
It sort of reminds me of the episode Where's Johnny, where Junior actually is having, it's the first sign of his true dementia kind of setting in,
right?
Where he's wandering around in a bathrobe and hanging out with like an older sex worker on a bench who offers him a half and half in the back seat or whatever. But this definitely seems like they used some of this stuff as an influence for that whole situation.
100%. It's like, you know, he is doing an impression of Junior Soprano, who actually was suffering from dementia at that point in the series. Like this is for sure what it was based off of. But yeah, I mean, that was his thing, but it was kind of like early on in his ruse, right? So like he was pretending to do it, but he was still doing stupid stuff like trying to bribe policemen. So that's when in 1969, he got indicted on a conspiracy to bribe the police in exchange for information. And as soon as he was indicted, he was actually, was able to make bail, and he checked himself into a mental hospital. And that's when his family started to revise his medical history. This is when they started trying to create a paper trail for it.
Oh, so like, wow.
When he first went to prison, right? Like they always, you know, have to get a medical history. And his mom would say stuff like, oh, he's perfectly healthy. You know, he's a great kid, blah, blah, blah. Wonderful, smart, whatever. And then as soon as he checked into the mental hospital in 69, all of a sudden they started remembering all this, like a host of other mental problems. And it's kind of interesting because from what I was reading at first, they didn't really know what would constitute mental illness. So a lot of the things they were listing were things like he has a severe temper. He's afraid of the dark. He has been truant from school. And my favorite one, he was at one time obese. None of these things are mental illness. So at some point, I assume they consulted with like an actual doctor. And that's when they started settling on the idea of him being a paranoid schizophrenic. So in 1969, his lawyers presented the reports from psychiatrists at his trial saying that he was a paranoid schizophrenic. And he was actually, he was declared unfit to stand for trial. And the charges against him were dropped. So the Incompetence Act actually worked. And it continued to work for another 30 years. What ended up happening is from this point on, he just never dropped the I'm Crazy Act. He just was always outside in a robe, slippies, floppy hat, pissing on stuff, you know, eating his own doo-doo, whatever they do, right? So, and in one instance, like agents were serving him a subpoena and they found Gigante standing naked in the shower holding an umbrella.
and, like you do. That's, yeah. I mean, no, you know, I mean, come on.
This feels like such a Looney Tunes caricature of insanity. It's like, you know what would look really crazy if I was out in the shower, but I had an umbrella.
You go in the shower to get wet on purpose. This
and
is
I'm on the inside of the house, foolproof.
I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
I wear the shoes on my hands and the pants on the top of my body.
It's pretty much me and Machiavelli at this point. I do have a question. I do have a question.
Sure.
And maybe this is something we answer toward the end. But Matt, one of the things that occurs to me when we're getting really into his Day-Lewis level acting on the the method front. Boxing has tremendous potential to damage someone's cognitive functions over time. Do you think that this could have played some sort of role? I don't think the science was really there for people to investigate that.
Well, I also want to know, like, how, aside from the doctoring of the records and maybe them playing into that, maybe this is an example of like with Junior, where he was sort of faking it at first and then gradually did succumb to serious mental decline. Is it sort of a combination of those two things, or where's the proof that we're like, oh, he definitely was playing up until the bitter end?
I mean, even just the quarantine, I feel like, has ruined my ability to like hold in burps and farts in public. Like I've sort of I almost lost the ability because I haven't had to do it for so long. I can only imagine what it'd be like if you're trying to pretend to be crazy for an extended period of time.
Yeah. If you're, once you're comfortable, like doing a little pee-pee in the middle of the street in front of strangers, like you end up being a guy who's like, I'm sorry, I just pissed my pants. I usually do that on purpose. And at this point, I've trained my bladder to pee every time I sense danger. So I imagine that, and I also think like a little bit of it is like, I don't think it's CTE. I don't think he had like some sort of brain damage from his fights or anything like that.
Okay.
You know, or at least his family doesn't think that. And the FBI, but I mean, who would trust the FBI? I do think though, that there's an argument to be made that if you pretend to be totally insane, you know, for however long, for 40 years, like that's a form of insanity just to to pretend, you know what I mean? Like you have to be kind of crazy to think that this is a life worth living. It kind of like defeats the purpose of being in the mafia. It's like, don't you want to be a tough guy walking down the street and just being like, hey, I'm walking, you know?
Oh, like, surely this didn't sit well with his like peers. They probably, he was like a laughing stock. Or do you think they thought he was a genius? I'm interested.
So as far as I can tell, they were early on, they were like, hey, this is actually a pretty good idea. But there were some tapes of you know, like people doing wiretaps and whatnot, in which they started to complain about like him basically doing the crazy act and like how it's difficult to like to talk to him, you know, for extended periods of time.
It's like doing a movie with Jared Leto, you know, where he's just constantly like shitting in boxes and like handing it to you. Ha ha ha, I'm a crazy clown
man.
Exactly. I'm going to say it, no disrespect, but umbrellas are for outside. You know?
Exactly. Well, it reminds me, like, I have a 12-year-old daughter and like her whole peer group and like Gen Z or whatever, like they're all about like ironic humor and liking things ironically. But a time, right? I mean, we all are. But after a time, if you love something ironically, don't you just love the thing? Like, isn't that really, you just kind of become that thing?
irony poisoning.
Yeah, it reminds me when I first started watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, a decade ago, you know, and I started ironically saying bro, because I just loved the timing of the way that they said bro. And then after maybe 2 months, I was just genuinely, earnestly saying bro at the end of every other sentence. And
same,
I was
dude. Like, I am cursed with bro. I can't stop.
I can't stop
bro.
With bro either. Know, and at this point, I've come to accept myself as someone who says bro.
Yeah, I legitimately like the song All Star by Smash Mouth now, just because I've played it in so many situations as a joke that like the song legitimately brings me joy now. And it comes on and I get excited about it.
You programmed yourself, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you know, and I think there's a level of that with Vincent the Chin Gigante, where he was, I think, you know, I think he was driving himself a little
bit
crazy.
It's kind of funny
because
the lead singer of Smash Mouth was actually named Vincent the Chinstrap Gigante.
Hell yeah. Yeah, it's true.
That is true. Everyone knows that.
Yeah. He changed it to Steve Harwell for some reason.
And that dude also is known for driving himself insane for responding to every troll of All Star on Twitter, like legitimately with like absolute indignation. Like, no, we had other hits too. We're not just famous because of Shrek.
We had Walking on the Sun.
He was also, he was like the version of a Trump reply guy where he was convinced that Trent Baalke, who was like the worst GM of the 49ers ever, he was always like the number one Trent Baalke defender, where he's like, no, he's playing 10-dimensional chess. You guys just can't understand it right now.
That's weird because that's a different sport.
That's right.
But I think you're making a fantastic point, because that there is something inherently off about deciding this is not just a short-term strategy, but a long-term strategy. And Vincent's kind of rewarded, because getting off on an insanity plea is so fucking rare. You know what I mean? Like, I can't blame him for doubling down at that point, but I think you're right. It does have consequences cognitively.
It has consequences, but it keeps you out of the can. And it really did keep him out of the can for decades. I mean, this guy was, and I guess it was, what was so funny about it is that this simultaneously kept him out of lockup for years while actually being the most obvious fake ploy in the world. Like, cops would talk about the fact that, like, because they were monitoring him, right? Like, the FBI, they wouldn't just see him in public. The FBI, their whole thing is also monitoring you in private. So just here's like a little slice of like the day in the life of Vincent the Chin Gigante. So in the early evening, Mr. Gigante would emerge from his mother's walk-up apartment, and he would be dressed in a bathrobe and pajamas and windbreaker sometimes, shabby trousers, always, you know, looking like dog shit and accompanied by some bodyguards. And he would, you know, cross the street over to the Triangle Civic Improvement Association, this dingy storefront, and he would, you know, do the whole walk where he's just like, I'm crazy, everything is you know, math is backwards or whatever. And then as soon as he would get in there, he started playing pinochle. He had conversations, you know, he was talking to his confederates and he was planning stuff. You know, it was like it was clear that as soon as he entered inside, he would be normal. And then after midnight, he would get outside again. Oh, I'm just a crazy guy. He would go over to his Gumar's house, and then he would immediately dress in very nice clothing, have nice dinners, hang out with his kids, and you know, like carry on conversations and watch some TV. Be totally normal. And they were seeing this. They were just like, this is fake. and then of course he would go to sleep. And the next morning he would do it all over again. Walk outside. I'm going to get a peanut. And then, you know, and then do some, you know, plan some crimes.
So not nearly as clever as like Verbal Kent losing the limp and becoming Kaiser Soze. You know what I mean?
No, but also he was basically just doing a Soze.
He just walks down the street and the doo-doo goes back in his pants. the front dries off.
the parking meter really could talk.
He realized he was just reading from the bulletin board the whole time, you know, from the coffee mugs and stuff. Yeah.
There's this great quote from the former director of the New York State Organized Crime Task Force, Ronald Goldstock, where he would monitor him, and he said, quote, "It was hard to understand what enjoyment he got out of being a mob boss," which I think is
wow.
is absolutely true, because it just seems like absolute torture to be like, "God damn it, I forgot to go get milk at the store. Okay, I can't get eat of my own dog," like as he's walking. Like, that sucks. So yeah, he continued to do this public, ruse for the rest of his mafia career, pretty much, until eventually he was, a jury of his peers were like, "Quit playing with us. We know you're freaking lying over here."
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So under Gigante's leadership, basically in 1980, he became the head of the Genovese crime family. His criminal enterprise brought in $100 million a year at its height.
Jeez. The 70s or when is this?
80s. The 70s and 80s, yeah.
That's crazy money. Wow.
Yeah, the most lucrative mafia enterprise in American history. So this crazy guy was actually the most successful mob boss. But of course, in the 80s, we have the beginnings of the whole John Gotti era, right? And, John Gotti ended up basically... I think he himself ordered the hit on Big Paul Castellano, and they didn't ask the commission and whatnot. And the Chin was outraged at Gotti. He tried to kill him a few times, and Gotti took over the Gambino crime family. So he hated John Gotti. Mm-hmm. So he tried to have him killed. He got close. In an effort to kill John Gotti, he did a bombing that killed his underboss, Frank DiCicco, and badly injured a John Gotti lookalike who was mistakenly targeted.
Was Frank DiCicco Frankie the Cheek DiCicco? Because that would be good.
I mean, I would assume that was what they would call him. It would be crazy if he was like Frankie.
It'd be a missed opportunity.
It's better than Frankie Cheeks. That's taking it in a different direction.
Ooh, Frankie Cheeks is the name of, I think, the gay porn star that I really, really like.
Follow their Instagram. It's great. Follow their lot of political commentary.
Oh, he's fantastic. He tried to kill John Gotti. Didn't work out. So finally, in 1990, Gigante was indicted on some federal charges in Brooklyn, you know, for a bunch of stuff, like all of the normal mafia crap, which is just like, you know, he was skimming off the top of this labor union and, like, you know, he had like a window scam. Like every window that was built in New York in new construction, he would get like 50% or something. It was just like this ridiculous ticky-tack stuff that earned lots of money. So he got indicted, and you know, of course, at his arraignment, he appeared in court in pajama, bathrobe, you know, a peaked cap, you know, just really going for like really Looney Tunes level craziness. And he actually was tried separately because for the next 7 years, they basically, you know, they put his competence on trial. There were 7 years of legal battles to be like, this guy's not crazy. And then finally in 1997, a bunch of turncoat mafiosos, ex-mafiosos, led by ex-Gotti underboss Salvatore Sammy the Bull Gravano, they basically snitched and said, you know, this is all fake. This is Gigante's, you know, the head of the Genovese crime family. He's on the commission, you know, all that stuff. And the trial in 97 was like a crazy spectacle. Like he was in a wheelchair. He was mumbling. He was pretending he didn't know what was going on, you know, just like, I was eating the gabagool and the gabagool didn't come. And, you know, he's doing his whole thing. And his lawyers were like,
killed them all? Of course I did.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he was doing the Robert Durst thing.
Just peeing on the snack bar at the at the Rite Aid.
Quoting Slipknot lyrics, I'm sure.
Exactly. And then... So at one point during this trial, there was the quote battle of the wheelchairs, in which, another wheelchaired old man, Peter Chiodo, a 300-pound mobster, testified against him. Now, this guy had survived the gangland execution because, quote, his fat stopped a dozen bullets. So it's good to know that if you gain enough weight, you become bulletproof.
That's a superpower. That's incredible. Yeah,
it's pretty sick. So the jury ended up in 97 going, we're convicting you. You're not crazy. Even after this conviction, he spent 6 more years pretending he was crazy. It took him six years.
See, case in point, my friend, I swear to God, he had drunk his own Kool-Aid and was now like the ruse had failed.
Yeah,
clearly in a huge way, but he couldn't break the habit. He had like he's got an itch for this now. He can't not do it.
I mean, I think, you know, he's just, you know, he's a method guy and he's just like, I'm not losing this. And, you know, but he actually did finally admit it after, you know, 6 years of prison.
Louise. Wow.
In April 2003, at a hearing.
Someone should just make a movie where Jared Leto plays like a hermit and just keep telling him that it keeps getting postponed, you know? And like, you gotta stay in character, man. It's like, we got postponed again. You just gotta stay in your house for a little longer. Don't come out.
This is gonna be amazing, Jared. Yeah. It's gonna be amazing.
It's gonna be so good. You're gonna get a double Oscar somehow for acting. It's gonna be first ever in history. Just stay inside. Bye. We'll tell you when.
Yeah. You're finally going to get the Oscar for playing someone with mental illness. It's hard. Everyone shoots for it.
Yeah.
They always fall flat on their face. You know, I Am Sam and all that. What was the only one that it really worked for? It was, I guess, Rain Man, maybe.
Yeah, Dustin Hoffman.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump, you could argue, was a savant, kind of. Well, that's, I guess, true. So was Rain Man.
We're going to turn into Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder real quick.
That's what I'm saying. That's why that's such a brilliant satire.
None of those folks, though, were also real life mob bosses.
No,
that's true. Yeah. You have to really give credit where credit is due here, because he was doing this not to prepare for a role. He was doing this because he was like, I really, really enjoy messing with the FBI.
I mean,
and,
if Tom Hanks is a mob boss, I think Chet Hayes is definitely the AJ. Like, that's the greatest case.
100%.
100, yeah.
Chet Hayes is AJ Soprano, all grown up and in an age of TikTok.
Oh, boy.
He actually did admit the insanity ruse in April 2003. He was, it was a bit. After 40 years of public craziness, Gigante calmly pleaded guilty to obstruction of justice for this entire deception.
Wow.
And I just want to end here with a quote from Jerry Capeschi. He was a mafia expert and author of 6 books on organized crime. The Looney Tunes Act served Gigante well. It kept him out of prison for years, but in the end, he was the victim of his own crazy act. He never had a chance to enjoy the fruits of his plunder, and he told some people that if given the chance, he wouldn't do it that way again.
Oh. Okay. Hindsight is 20/20, especially when you've been like doing this thing for 40 years. That is wild.
He would
that's what I was thinking the whole time, is like, how is he enjoying the fruits of his like criminal labors or whatever?
He would buy fine alligator shoes only to have to doo-doo on them.
It's very monkey's paw, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the
really,
way
really
he
is.
Got his wish. That's an amazing it's an amazing story, Matt, and maybe it is a bit of a cautionary tale for some of our ridiculous historians. You know, you can be more than the bathrobe and the doo-doo.
There is such a thing as overcommitting to the bit. And I think this is the case for that. Is this dramatized in it? I know there's a lot of gaudy movies. There's like the real bad one that's apparently delightfully bad with Travolta. And then there's the one with Armand Asante, I guess, that was an HBO thing from the 90s. Is this character, have we seen anybody play this guy?
Apparently he was also shown in the movie The Godfather of Harlem, where Vincent D'Onofrio plays him.
Okay. Oh, that's some prestige casting right there. Yeah.
And there was like a Law and Order episode where they had basically someone inspired by Gigante.
Less prestige, but okay. Respectable.
Yeah. Fascia.
Yeah, that is exactly right. And then, of course, like you said, the bad Gotti movie made by, who made that? Was it E or Turtle?
E from Entourage.
Okay.
All 5 boroughs, the Bronx, Manhattan, Staten Island, Brooklyn, and Queens, together they make a fist. He names them all out as the best. Actually, the best line from that movie that will never leave my head is, in this life, you either end up dead or in jail. Me, I done both.
It reminds me of a line from, I think it's Carlito's Way. I've never even seen the movie, and I think it's apparently pretty good. But there's a line from the trailer where it's like, "In this, I always wondered whether it was better to be loved or to be feared. I prefer to be feared." Something along those lines. It's like the most obvious shit.
It's
on
like,
the
what is the sound of one hand clapping? Well, it goes something like this. It's like, no, that's not the point of the question. I mean, okay.
I love it. So we're talking about a larger than life character, and the world of organized crime has so many of these. I don't know if all of them are going to be, I'll say it, as amazing, Matt. Uh-huh. As Gigante, but we also have some larger than life events, because when we're talking about boneheaded things, we're not just talking about people being boneheaded or going a little to Daniel Day-Lewis. We're also talking about people doing things that are clearly bad, bad ideas.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I was cracking up, peek behind the curtain, when Noel and I were looking into this. Noel, I think we had stumbled across a story that we both loved that, I don't know about you, man, I had never heard about this until prepping for this episode. And
no, I had neither. And we're going to move from New York mob territory to Chicago, where the mob was referred to as the outfit, or at least the particular. And, you know, again, the mob, to your point, Lucky Luciano, wasn't that a Chicago guy? Because he was buds with Al Capone and they split. Al Capone was definitely a Chicago guy, but like Lucky Luciano.
Lucky was the New York guy, but he started
under Al, and then they like went their separate ways and became kind of adversaries. I'm literally thinking in Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen Boardwalk Empire, mm-hmm. So I don't remember exactly, but it feels right.
So this guy, his name is Don Accardo, or he goes by Tony the Big Tuna Accardo.
Oh, the Big Tuna.
He's the Big Tuna. And like,
isn't that from The Office?
Well, yeah, he's like, you know, what's that, where he's like reeling him in, reeling, because he gets a tuna salad one day and now he becomes Big Tuna. That's true. Yeah. This is pre The Office, though. This is like in the, you know, in the 60s, maybe even earlier. I mean, definitely earlier, because Accardo was early running crew mates with Al Capone in Chicago. So Accardo actually kind of came up under him. There was an attempt on Al Capone's life that I also believe was dramatized in Boardwalk Empire. And Accardo like dove on top of his, you know, mentor and like, you know, shielded him from the bullets, and he wasn't killed, but he stuck around and ended up becoming like the biggest name in the outfit for many years. Even after he was older, he was not necessarily like day-to-day running things, but he was known. He was like the guy that you feared. And he had this situation where he had this amazing home in a bougie neighborhood in Chicago. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have been in Chicago, but it gets really, really, really cold in the winter. Like, have this thing called the polar vortex. It's bonkers. It's like absolutely unlivably cold there. So,
yeah, it's a weird thing that there's a whole city there, because I have my cousins and, you know, aunt and uncle live out there, and they live there and they describe it as unlivable.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, they built the whole city one summer. No one knew what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. By that point, they got the skyscrapers and everything. Right. And it's like,
they fast tracked it. And then they're like, well, what do we do? What do we do? We're here.
We built it during the spring when it was, you know, a moderate temperature. And then all of a sudden, it was the hottest and coldest place in the world. And we said, well, we already built the Sears Tower.
Is this a Game of Thrones type scenario where like summer lasts for like 50 years and then there's one winter? Okay, well, let's just assume that that's the case. So Accardo is vacationing in California. This is in the 70s, in the late 70s. In fact, January 6th of 1978. And a crew of, you know how the mafia has, like, there's made guys, which is a thing. You know, you've got, like, your top guys, your earners, your capos. There's a whole structure to it. I believe you have the, you know, there's the boss, then there's underbosses, then there's capos, then there's soldiers. Is that
right?
Is that about
right?
Yeah,
you got friends of ours, and you got friends of mine, and then friends of Dorothy, which are the gay mobsters, of course.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Is that like a Vito reference, or did you just make that? That was good. Yeah.
Friends of Dorothy, it's a thing.
Okay, that's a thing from back in the day. Yeah,
I would not doubt it. One scrap. But so he's vacationing in California, and this crew that they've used, you know, his whole organization, the outfit has used to do all of these heists and robberies, rob his house. This guy, this very, very dangerous guy, he actually got the nickname Johnny Batters because he was known for like cracking
baking
skulls
some cakes.
A baseball. No, that was cute. That was good. And it's certainly possible. But no, in fact, it was because of a thing that we also often see attached to Al Capone. Al Capone was fond for cracking skulls with a baseball bat. Nice. He probably learned that from his mentor, Al Capone. But Johnny Batters and he... Very much a scary, scary guy, even as an old man. Can you imagine being menaced by a super old, scary mob guy like that?
Yeah.
Like, you look at him and you see
all the time.
Well, I'm sorry for you on that front, Ben, but for me, like, you see him, you think they're so innocuous, and then they all, I think of like Feach LaManna, for example.
Sure.
You look at him, he's this frail old man, Robert Loggia, and then he just starts kicking you in the dick, you know, right in the, you're just trying to cut your lawns, you know. He's saying, this belongs to my nephew now, and then he just kicks you in the dick repeatedly and breaks your arm. That would be the most PTSD-inducing kind of trauma that I could possibly imagine.
Absolutely.
So you underestimate these old-timers, and then they absolutely are total psychopaths.
Yeah.
So this guy, at this point, he's longer in the tooth, and he... is, you know, kind of in his twilight years, and this crew knocks over his house. Why do they do that, you might ask? Well, I'll tell you.
Why do they do that, Noel?
You might ask that, and I might have an answer for you.
Why do they do that?
Oh, my God. I definitely have an answer. So, at this point, you know, Accardo, he's got friends. He's not necessarily, like, actively involved in racketeering anymore. He's feels like he's dodged the, you know, the long arm of the law. And he's just like living out his twilight years with his wife and vacationing in California and all that stuff. He has a jeweler friend who has had a heist, you know, done to his place of business. And all of these jewels and cash bundles and gold and diamonds all knocked off from this dude's establishment on Christmas of 1977. And the crew that did it was led by this guy named John Mendel, who is known as John the Bypass Man Mendel, which kind of sounds like a cool like hacker nickname, you know.
Sure.
This is in the 70s, and it was referring to the fact that he could disarm any alarm system. That was his whole deal.
That's that shocking that he wasn't just some mobster who'd had bypass surgery.
That's what I assumed it was.
From too much gabagool. Too much. That's all the nitrates. Yeah. That'll, you got it. Yeah. Too
Vinny
much
Mangina Gigante. Sorry, angina.
Yep. Also
they call
true.
Him the hernia, but don't ask about it when you meet him.
So the owner of this jewelry store is friends with Johnny Batts. That's not his name. It was, what did I say? Johnny Batter. Accardo. And he asks him, you know, he entreats him, please, Don, you know, intervene on my behalf. Get me back my stolen goods. Sort of like the episode where one of Tony's poker buddies has his daughter's wedding hit by Feach LaManna, and they steal all these like fine cars.
Yeah.
And then that guy comes to Tony and says, hey, they stole my brother's whatever it was, some special car that it took him ages to get on the list for. His glasses and his day planner were in there. Like, I love that that's like the thing that he bitches about.
Now who's the genius for keeping his regal?
That's exactly.
What, one so of the dudes at the party says
100%. 100%.
Because he has the worst car, and it's the only one that doesn't get stolen.
The American car. So this is a very similar situation. The jeweler entreats Cardo to like get him his stuff back, and he does. He makes Bypass Man return all his stuff. So the Bypass Man is understandably a little sore about this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was an off-the-books deal, because you would think a guy like Cardo would have been, you know, aware of all of these. But in Sopranos, it was Feach going rogue. So right. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a similar situation where it was this guy going out on his own and doing a thing that ended up stepping on toes.
Yep.
And then he gets his wrist slapped. So they do return the stuff, but he takes it very, very, very personally. And he decides to get even in the stupidest way possible, which is by breaking into this legacy Don's home while he's away and stealing a whole bunch of shit. Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, it leads to an absolute bloodbath. Just, you know, the worst kind. You know, everybody from his crew is targeted. First is the Bypass Man, who is found with his throat slashed ear to ear and I believe shot in the head. They usually have like a two-part execution just to be sure. Just to make sure they don't.
Man, just bypass to be sure. This.
Bypass bang, bang. This.
That's probably what they said.
Exactly.
I hope they said bang, bang.
You got to.
Well, the onomatopoeia.
Exactly.
Just to make sure everybody knows what's happening.
Bang, bang.
Yep. Bang, bang.
So on January 15th, the Bypass Man he's disappeared. Yeah. They find him in the trunk of his car. He has been stabbed, his throat's been slit, and he's also been strangled to death. Excuse me, I got that wrong. Then 5 days later, after he went missing, they didn't find his body for a long time. His second in command, this guy named Bernard Buddy Ryan, was found dead behind the wheel of his own car, which is such a classic mafia trope, you know, finding someone slumped over with the headshot, brains on the passenger window. Totally
makes it clear it's
this.
Not a robbery.
100%. Exactly. Then that guy's right-hand man, a dude named Stevia Garcia, he made it a little bit longer. I think.
Stevia?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Stevia.
Stevia. Stevia.
This is my cousin, NutraSweet Chavez.
Yeah. They got out of the mafia eventually. They're in the sweeteners.
I'm not going to lie.
This is Johnny Sweet and Low Capone.
we all agreed we were going to have a beer with this one. I think I may have misread Stevie as Stevia, but I love that so very much.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be amazing if his name was Stevia Garcia? This was pre-Stevia, though, I got to say.
Cause cancer. I don't know. Do people still think that about
Sweeteners. You know what?
If you feed it in truckloads to lab rats.
That's the really tense part of the moment, you know, of the executions, where it's like, you know, they say I give people cancer and bad for your health if you're a rat.
Exactly.
Pew pew.
Bang bang indeed. And they find him in the trunk of his own car. That's a thing too. We see a trope where it's like dudes get stuffed into the trunks of their own car. I guess just to like, you know, keep the authorities from finding them right away. I mean, eventually they find them, of course. And this was in the parking lot of a Sheraton hotel, which I don't think of as like a legacy thing, but I guess there were Sheratons in the 70s. Maybe they go back farther than I realized.
Well, this is, what do you call it? It's Chicago, right?
It's Chicago O'Hare Airport. So is Sheraton a Chicago thing?
Well, I mean, again, I'm basing everything I know off of Boardwalk Empire, but I'm pretty sure that there's also a Irish mafioso named Sheraton. So, you know, I'm just putting pieces together from old HBO shows that I don't remember.
We've got our HBO conspiracy board. Red threads.
There's a red thread from a random person I remember to a Sheraton hotel.
Yeah, the Sheraton hotel is spelled with a T, and I would think the Irish version would be spelled with a D, maybe.
Yeah, but they're trying to throw off the police.
That could be right.
I mean?
That could be
the
right.
The perfect plan.
Yeah. So he's found in the trunk on February 2nd. Then on February 4th, we've got Vince Moretti, who was the fence for that burglary crew, and a friend of his, an associate named Don Reno. They get, I'm not quite sure exactly how, but they're lured in some sort of ruse to a bar in Cicero in Illinois, and they are beaten to death. And the guy that was with him, this buddy, his name is Don Reno, not Don like he's a boss. His name's just actually
Don. Oh, it's Donald?
Short for Donald.
That's
yeah.
unfortunate. Hopefully exactly. nominative determinism kicks in.
He had absolutely yeah. nothing to do with the robbery. He just happened to be with this guy and got also curb stomped at this
no,
bar.
No, I'm not right. My name is Donald. No, Donald.
Yes, no. Boom.
I was
crunch.
Told there was a Slipknot concert at this bar.
Indeed. And this they one
end up,
actually
they end up murdering Donald Duck because they're like, oh, it's Don Duck over here. No, I'm a cartoon.
I wish I could do a Donald Duck voice. That's a really hard voice to
That's
do.
That's a hard voice.
It's a really hard voice. So they actually, there's a really sexy name for this one. It's called the Strangers in the Night Murders.
Nice.
And that's because in a very, very cinematic turn, very Sopranos-esque, the Johnny Mathis song Strangers in the Night was playing on the jukebox as Moretti and Reno are curb stomped.
Wow.
Inside. I mean, I guess there's no curbs inside a bar, but it reminds me of the scene where Tony stomps Coco
yeah.
in that Italian restaurant. That is a nasty piece of work right there, by the way.
Yeah.
There's no way he would have survived that. I was a little suspect of that. He literally makes him bite the edge of this, like, you know, piece of furniture and
right.
stomps his head, and then you see teeth and blood flying everywhere, and they imply that he was not killed, but I feel like that would crush a person's skull if your mouth is on it. Like in, what's that movie? American History X.
Yeah. Well, you know, Coco is a big, strong man. And
big, strong jaw. Like, he probably had a strong chin.
Yeah.
Jaw is the most powerful muscle in the human body.
I thought that was the heart.
Aw, that's sweet, man.
Well, the second thing I was going to say is I thought that was the dick.
I was also thinking that.
It depends on your mobster. Someone's like, oh, I skipped jaw day. Fuck.
Max right now is facepalming. Like, I got to cut so much out of this.
No, we're going to do a little like, I've been watching the show Ted Lasso on Apple TV.
It. Yeah.
It's fantastic. I adore it. But there's a thing that the soccer commentators always say where they say, we apologize for all the fruity language.
Yeah,
we're going to do a similar disclaimer before this one where we're going to say there's going to be some fruity language in this episode.
I have a question, though.
Yeah, please.
All right. So this is clearly a series of murders meant to send a message, and it's happening over a number of days, right? And the message is pretty simple. You don't mess with Tony Accardo, or you don't mess with Big Tuna. But why did none of these people run away? I understand the first guys who got murdered probably didn't see it coming, but at some point, wouldn't you be like, huh, a lot of people are getting killed. A lot of people that I kicked it with. Could they not afford to get out of town? Were they like, surely this won't affect me? Or what happened?
It's a good question. I think it goes back to the topic of this two-part episode, that a lot of these dudes are kind of dumb and kind of like up their own asses and like think that they're like invincible. It's like, you know, they literally brag about this stuff probably, honestly. I don't think, I mean, even Tony Soprano, the relatively smartest dude in the show, is kind of dumb. You know, and that's sort of the point. You're sort of seeing this culture of bravado and posturing and not actual smarts. It's street smarts, but I mean, you know, even Tony only goes to ground when literally all of the people closest to him get whacked. I'm sorry. Can we spoilers for The Sopranos, which is now 20 years old.
It was going to happen.
Yeah. But yeah, go ahead, please.
I mean, maybe like, you know, first of all, I think that if you're in the mafia for an extended period of time, then at some point you do just look at yourself as bulletproof because you've just survived so many near misses and so many people, you know, who are like getting shot and all that stuff, that you kind of like you convince yourself that you're invincible and you're able to do what you want. But also, how much of this crew was made? I assume none of them, right?
No. It's funny. In fact, I wanted to just mention something about Accardo himself. He was made, but it was sort of a note in a lot of the stuff that I read about this where they didn't do the ceremony where you burn the saint and prick your finger and all that. It was done with more of a handshake. So I'm sure there were some that maybe questioned that.
It was like the second part of Weird Science when they didn't put the Playboy... in with the machine, right. And then they got the bomb instead.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the guy, maybe, I guess what I'm getting at is maybe that gave this guy a bigger axe to grind in terms of like, you will respect me even though I didn't burn the saint. If anyone's listening, I don't know, Matt, you want to talk about what it means to get made and anything you know about that term? I've always wondered where that term even comes from.
Yeah, so all I know about the term, or at least the technical implications of being made, are that when you get made, which is this obviously the ceremony that has like burning of a saint, and you know, you prick your finger and you take an oath saying like, I promise I won't be a snitch. Once you're made, then someone hitting you or trying to kill you is like a lot harder, because you can't hit a made guy. You can't kill a made guy without getting permission. You're basically just a protected person. Now you are like officially in the mafia. And there's a lot of people in the mafia who are kind of associates in the mafia. They're soldiers and whatnot, who are not made people, who are trying to, it's basically,
it's like tenure.
It's like tenure. I was going to say, for a stand-up comic, it's like trying to get passed at a club. It's like, you know, yeah.
Or
you get
like
to
be
go
under
up,
contract. You're under contract right now or whatever.
So, right. Yeah. You get to go up at like some shows, but you're not a paid regular until, you know, the booker sees you and goes like, all right, you are now a part of the club. You can put your name on the wall. So it's like, it's a place of.
And then they make you hold your hands out while they burn a whoopee cushion in your hands.
And I think that ceremony is probably pretty aristocrats heavy, but with
no
with
sure
a, yeah with a made man, I from what I remember, everything you just said, Matt, is spot on. But for a while, at least in the earlier days, one also had to be either fully Sicilian or
right.
fully Italian,
fully
just,
yeah.
There were
a million
like
percent.
Irish or Jewish mobsters.
They had to be able
that
to
made men.
Trace your ancestry back to the old country and like know.
And that's why his name's character, Ray Liotta's character in Goodfellas, could never be a made man. He was always just beneath that, but he like was so valuable that he was treated that way, but he knew he could never be made because I think he had Irish
right,
because
he's Irish. And it was the same thing, I think, with Robert De Niro's character. He also couldn't be made because he was like half Irish or something.
Henry Hill and Jimmy Conway.
Right.
There he is.
But Joe Pesci, he could be made, and he almost was. And then, bullet to the back of the skull.
He kind of had it coming, man. That guy's a real piece of work.
Oh, he's a real piece of work, that man.
But really, really quickly, just to wrap this up, what ended up happening was, like often happens, and I'm really glad we had this made conversation, because no, none of these dudes were made, therefore they were absolutely expendable, and that extended to his inner circle. He started then bumping off people that did the hits to cover his tracks the FBI. So he started bumping off his own people, Anthony Little Tony Barcelino and Gerald... Get this. Jerry the Dinger.
Yeah.
I guess it could be pronounced Dinger. It's possible. I'm pretty sure it's Jerry the Dinger. Hold on. Vince just came back. I got to give this to him again when he gets his headphones back on. Hang on. We got to wait for this. Vince, real time. We are now extending this bloodbath to this guy's inner circle to cover his own tracks. And one of the dudes that gets hit, his name is the best nick. I only waited for you because you're the nickname guy. The best nickname of today's episode is Gerald Jerry the Dinger.
Wow.
Carusiello.
Because of all the dinging, Vince.
He was always getting into little fender benders, you know? He was just always hitting parking meters and stuff. Just real poor driver. Had
really good at
eyesight.
Baseball, too. He was hitting dingers all down the left field line.
Always riding around in a little boat. It was pretty weird.
Yes. The dinghy for the dinger. They got a pretty permanent attitude adjustment.
In the form of a bullet to the back of the head, like execution style.
As Big Tune is covering his tracks. Noel, did anybody get arrested? Was justice ever done?
No, sir. It wasn't. In fact, this is interesting. One of the slain individuals who were part of the crew, their eyeglasses were actually found in a safe inside the very home. Cardo's home. Years later, during a raid.
Bring me a piece of each of them.
Exactly. Yeah, but his body was never found. Big Tuna died in 1992. He never was convicted, never went to prison. He served almost 50 years as the head of the mafia, the outfit in Chicago, and never did anything more than a little stint.
How did he die? Was it mercury poisoning?
exactly. No, all I've got here is peacefully. So presumably not. I think mercury poisoning is pretty gnarly.
Yeah, well, I figured because he was tuna. You know, there's a lot of leaps I made.
But we also talked about some other kind of poisoning earlier. Irony poisoning. That's what it was.
Right. This is a poison heavy episode.
So Accardo died in 92 from respiratory and heart conditions.
Thank you, Ben. Ben with the deets. Ben always chiming in with the deets. I love
that.
Look
at you, Wikipedia-ing stuff.
I know, right? Sorry. it's definitely all of Wikipedia, but I checked the sources and they're legit. Chicago Tribune has an interesting article where they just said low-key send-off for Accardo. And they're kind of painting it as though it's the end of a mafioso era.
It certainly
and
was.
They're like comparing it to funerals of old.
He died of a cardiac arrest.
Yeah, so he did get arrested. Hey!
Should have called his friend bypass.
That's definitely my time. It's my time and our time. I can't wait for episode two, you guys. I can't. We've got two more incredible stories of boneheaded mafiosos and also just boneheaded criminals. I think Vince, yours is a little bit more of just like a general crime story. But guys, thank you so much for joining us. And I can't wait to have you back in literally in real time in just a few minutes, but in podcast time, a couple days.
I'm so excited.
Please, Matt, hold that excitement because we got to come in like barnstorming with the next episode. So before we sign off, of course, we always like to thank our super producer, Max Williams. We'd like to thank his brother, Alex Williams, who composed this slap and bop that's playing right now as Vince and Matt tell us where you can learn more about their work and their own podcast, the only Sopranos rewatch podcast that matters. Pod yourself a gun.
Yeah, you can check us out. On that podcast store, whatever your favorite store is, just search "Pod Yourself a Gun," and it is the world's only Sopranos podcast. And you might see some familiar guests there. For example, Noel Brown was on the first episode of season 5 this season. So. So check that out, and you can follow me on Instagram at Matt Lieb Jokes or Twitter at Matt Lieb.
How about you, Vince?
I am at Up Rocks, where I am the senior film and culture writer. And of course, Pod Yourself a Gun. And we have our other podcast, The Fraughtcast.
That's right.
You can find us at patreon.com/fraughtcast. And that's pretty much it. I'm at Vince Mancini on Twitter. And yeah, I think that covers it.
And everybody will have to tune in to part two, where we do explore these mafia nicknames that we are hyping up so much, you guys. We're making some work for ourselves.
Well, usually you have to contribute to the Patreon to get one of those, but hopefully, because we had you on as guest, you'll just give it to us for free.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I have a list, too, so I can hand you guys some that you might appreciate. I'll work on it. I got homework. I want to make you proud. I want to make you guys proud. But stay tuned for our next episode, where we will be diving into some more very, very boneheaded stories of crime. Can't wait to see you.
We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.